pictures. I don't know if you guys do pictures at this meeting, but mm-hmm. I have them anyway. Hi, my name is Beth, and I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi.
I know I'm a compulsive overeater because about 3 years ago, with my weight a rounding error away from 300 pounds, a doctor told me that I had two choices, have gastric bypass surgery or die an early death. And what did I do about that? I ate. I know I'm a compulsive overeater because I spent thousands of dollars and dozens of hours working out with a personal trainer 2 years ago and lost 40 pounds and gained back all but 8 pounds last year. I know I'm a compulsive overeater because I gained that weight despite a diagnosis of severe sleep apnea last April and despite having to appear in a friend's wedding in July. And the picture of me at that wedding is in the photo album. Needless to say, it's not very flattering. I know I'm a compulsive overeater because the night of my first OA meeting, August 4th, 2016, I left the meeting and drove straight to a convenience store, walked out with a pint of something frozen, took it home, and ate it in one sitting. I know I'm a compulsive overeater because for a few weeks after that, after every OA meeting, I found myself thinking only about what I was going to go home and eat. I know I'm a compulsive overeater because from the very beginning of my life, food has meant love and closeness and comfort, has been the focus of every holiday and special occasion, and because I've tried to recreate those feelings nearly every day by binging on sugar, fat, flour, or some combination of all of the above. I know I'm a compulsive overeater because when my chosen substance was finally taken away last August, I got worse for a while. I felt like I was going insane. And as someone who's been hospitalized for depression 5 times, I know what that feels like. No one wants to admit that they're an addict. No one wants to admit they're powerless, least of all this control freak. But by last August, life had finally beaten me into a state of reasonableness, as the big book says. After that last weight gain in early 2016, it had finally become unavoidable that my way didn't work. And it's not just that my way of dieting and losing weight didn't work, it was also my way of living. I decided after my last bout with depression that I didn't want to die, but I hadn't yet figured out how to go forward with life. And in the meantime, my life had once again become unmanageable. And if I thought the powerless thing was hard, I was blown away once I got to the unmanageable life part. I've held the same full-time job for over 11 years now, and I'm pretty good at what I do. What do you mean unmanageable? I'm fine. Of course, I was coming home from that job, abusing a substance that tends to make people eat, and then eating as much as I possibly could every night for most of the last 10 years, but I was fine. Because of the sleep apnea, the drugging, the overeating, the depression, and the lack of exercise, I was sometimes spending 48 hours at a stretch in bed, but I was high functioning. And all that God stuff, who needed that? I'd been an atheist since I was 14 years old, when a beloved grandmother died of cancer, and my divorce 5 years ago only proved that the universe is a dark, cold, hopeless place. When the big book told me that holding my own human intelligence to be the highest form of intelligence in the universe was rather vain, I dropped it on the floor and didn't look at it again for quite a while. When the big book told me later that I'd perhaps put myself in a position to be hurt by life, I threw it down again. Poor big book. I haven't had the audacity to be surprised at my own strong reactions to this stuff, and I know when something is really going to be a teachable moment for me because when I first hear it or read it, it makes me furious. So, you know, my sponsor has a saying that goes along with that, which is, if you spot it, you got it. But I wanted nothing more than not to believe that. But program worked away at my attitude. I kept coming back. I heard speaker after speaker tell their truths. And eventually I put the food down, stopped trying to run and hide from life and myself, and took an honest look at myself. And I thought, you know, as I was debating with myself whether I could really go forward with a belief in a higher power, I was totally cool with step one, powerless, absolutely. Step two, big problem. And so my addict brain told me that, you know, no world as bad as this one could possibly be overseen by a god, certainly not a benevolent one that gave a crap whether I stuffed my face or not. You know, things just kind of wore away at me. I've fought this program every step of the way, but You know, I finally had to sit and think because half this program seemed like what I desperately needed, and half of it seemed impossible. And I was between a rock and a hard place. I had the gift of desperation, and I just kind of went over and over it until I got it. And I finally just thought to myself, you know, has it really all been horrible darkness? I mean, have I not been given gifts along the way? Only that I'm still here, still living independently, after the physical and mental health crises that I've had. And am I unique in facing such challenges? Was I really singled out for punishment or abandonment? Or was I simply immune to hardships which are not immune to hardships which are a fact of life? And while I'm at it, where exactly did I acquire my deep sense of moral outrage at life's inherent universal unfairness? Where did I learn to feel entitled to a fair life? And what right do I have in the end to feel so very wronged that such a life does not exist? So, cracking the door I'd slammed against the big book had opened, and it's done nothing but widen ever since. So this is my step two story, and it's a fairly dramatic one. Some people might think overly dramatic, but it's my story. It's the only one I got. So almost exactly 5 years ago today, I was about to kill myself. I was in Las Vegas on business, staying at a high-rise hotel that's part of the MGM Grand. I was on the 27th floor, and there was a balcony. And, you know, I was standing on that balcony. I would go out there and literally stand there on the ledge looking down. And I knew it was now or never on the last day of my business trip. And I was close. I was close. My divorce had absolutely destroyed me. And I just, you know, life was a howling ocean in a storm, and I couldn't see any shore or any rescue. And I was just failing to cope with it. And, you know, all of a sudden, I thought of my parents, which may seem like an obvious thing to think about, but I was not, my brain was not working properly. It was not working for me. I didn't think to call the front desk and ask for a room on a lower floor. I didn't think of calling my therapist at home. I didn't think of calling 911, which would have been a legitimate response to that kind of emergency. I was not problem solving at all. So I tell you about all that to tell you this, because that dark moment was where a belief in a higher power really took root for me when I thought back. Because the timing of the thought of my parents, that clarity of thought in a moment that was otherwise not marked by much clear thought, that would later seem like the acts of a guardian spirit, a spirit that did for me then what I could not do for myself. And, you know, I still don't know if I believe in a God of the universe. I don't know if my higher power is your higher power, or if your higher power and my higher power report to the same regional manager. I don't know, and for a total know-it-all like me, that is a huge surrender, just to not know, to not know. But I do feel that I have been shown grace in my life. I do feel that I have been watched out for, maybe not every second of every day, and things certainly haven't gone the way I thought they were going to go, or the way I wanted them to, certainly. But, you know, at those moments of do or literally die, I, you know, had something that did for me what I couldn't do for myself. So, as I mentioned, I'd gone through a divorce after I discovered infidelity on the part of my ex-husband, and I blamed him completely for the collapse of our 12-year relationship. But after I was in program a few months, I also, you know, was chewing on this idea of having put myself in a position to be hurt. And the more I thought about it, the more I had to admit that I had not just been some unwitting, innocent patsy in my marriage. I was a deeply flawed partner myself. I would shut myself up in the bathroom using my substance and then come out and eat everything I could get my hands on. And I did this for years in spite of his repeated, thank you, requests that I stop. It doesn't mean that what he did was justified, but was I purely his victim? Not by a long shot. So that's denial for you. And denial is at the root of my disease. Denial is the biggest problem I have in my life today. I've been in such denial that I've been in denial about how in denial I am. I mean, I am good at denial. Especially over the last 6 years, I've been in denial about the character defects I have, about you know, the ways I'm making my own life unmanageable, and the grace that's allowed me to survive to this point. All of it. I don't know what I've been thinking about, because it certainly hasn't been reality. So, you know, I mean, there were the minimizations, like that I'd never stolen food, as I had heard about in the rooms, except while doing my step 4 inventory, I remembered suddenly that I regularly stole food from the leftovers in the break room kitchen at a movie theater where I worked in college. There was also, I never thought of myself as a big dieter. I didn't think, you know, I really had been, you know, down that road too far. But I was reading my journals, which I've kept since I was 10, in doing my step 4 inventory, and discovered that I had been on a diet when I was 10 and wrote about it. I also wrote down every single thing that I ate every day. So, you know, and then there's the, you know, I have not gone to the extremes you fellows did, kind of denial, where I told myself I didn't have a real eating disorder because I've never purged. You know, the kind of denial that's come to rely too heavily on my intellect, I intellectualize, that's one of my defense mechanisms. And so hearing that I have a thinking problem is a rude shock to my system. And the ultimate denial, the one that's at the root of everything, is that I'm, based on self-will alone, I am functional. I'm what they call a high-bottom drunk, and for years that was how I justified the unmanageable way I lived. I believed wholeheartedly that I was really angry all the time, not afraid. Anger has been my most common response to life, and the food and substances come in after that. And the anger is there to hide the fact that I'm actually so afraid, particularly of loss, that I don't even want to admit to myself how afraid I really am. And I did finally, you know, this program has pried ideas out of my cold, dead hands. And another one was that being a high-bottom drunk really isn't that much of an accomplishment. And if it is, it's not my accomplishment. It's not something I did. And I've been doing my step 4 inventory recently, which, you know, writing the resentments list, yeah, that's, I mean, who wouldn't enjoy that, right? Writing down all the people who have wronged you. And then the causes and effects, great, you know, get to point the finger and say exactly what they did wrong and what it affected. But in the turnarounds, I realized that I'm not the person I show the world, which nobody is, but I'm also not the person that I thought I was. I thought I was prone to depression and negative thinking, but overall I considered myself a tolerant person, a non-judgmental person, a fair person. And it turns out that's a load of horse pucky. It turns out that when I look at the ways I'm selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and afraid, I am a perfectionist to the extreme. I am power hungry. I am an all-or-nothing black and white thinker. I want to control everything and everyone around me at all times. And I consider myself the final arbiter in nearly every situation, whether it's my business or not. So through those things, I see the way I've played a leading role in my own unhappiness. But I know I can be a bit of a Debbie Downer, but I am beginning to work on these things one day at a time. I take step one and take it as often as I think of it, as often as I can. I look for the ways I'm still in denial. I look for the ways I still am trying to make my own life unmanageable. And I look for the ways that my higher power carries me through the messes I create for myself. So today I do have hope for the future and for my life. And today, thank you, I am a grateful, recovering, compulsive overeater. You know, I've lost weight, but that's not the point. the point is that I'm unraveling my thinking problem, that I am starting to join the human race, as they say. Another thing that really came as a shock to me was that I didn't invent any of this. I didn't invent turning to atheism in response to grief. I didn't invent coming back to belief out of necessity. I didn't invent program. I didn't invent addiction. I didn't, you know, it's all kind of a longstanding pattern of humanity, and I'm a part of it. And holding myself a part of it, apart from it, and believing in my own terminal uniqueness is just the height of delusion. You know, and I've been in therapy since I was 16. Like I said, I've been in the hospital a number of times for depression. I've had shrinks work on me for sure. I've had a pit crew of shrinks keeping me on the road the last 20 years. And I still, you know, had no idea about some of this stuff. I feel like I've done more in the last 6 months to improve my mental well-being than all the years of drugs and therapy have done for me. Which is not to discount them, because things had to unfold the way they unfolded for me. I was not functioning at all from a mental health standpoint until probably about 5 years ago, my last hospitalization. And I wasn't capable of working this program until at least then. So, but anyway, like I said, I am grateful. I am recovering. I don't know if I'll ever say recovered, but I've also learned that you never say never in this program. So that's my story. Thank you. So